Christine Marie and Julie, mother and daughter duo. Woohoo!
And I'm Christine Marie.
I'm Julie.
And you can tell us apart, right, people?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I can tell us apart pretty easily. But there are times when I'm listening to our rebroadcast,
mm-hmm.
and you can get all the archives on
bbsradio.com/Life with the Girlfriends.
Yes. And it's so funny because I listen to them, you know, to get better, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, was that mom or me saying that? I don't know.
Well, tonight, you know, I've got some sinus issues going on with a lot of post-nasal drip, so maybe I'll sound a little more nasally than you. But
well, that's hard to do because I have a tendency to sound real nasally. And I just took my cough drop out of my mouth, so
mm-hmm.
I got that little menthol rush through my body.
You know, we have a brand new puppy, Ellie. It's like 12 weeks old. I don't know. But the thought has occurred to me that perhaps I have an allergic reaction to him because I've had this now about 3 or 4 weeks, but it came like right upon that. Remember, we had those two colds right in a row.
Yeah,
and so I just kind of thought that was the end of the cold, but now the cold's gone, but this is staying. And the thing is, our little puppy is a Wheaton Terrier, and he is hypoallergenic.
Yes. And doesn't have fur, has hair. It doesn't shed very much.
So we're just taking a look-see. And in the meantime, I'm living on Zyrtec or stuff like that.
Yes. I'm trying to talk you into taking Zyrtec. You're not there yet, committed to that part, but you've been doing your homeopathic remedies and your good old saline solution.
Yes.
And sometimes you do that little nasal spray that's supposed to be for 3 days that maybe lasts a little longer.
Like when I just can't take it anymore, I'm like, let me breathe.
Let me just do a fourth of a, one pump. Just one pump, please.
Mm.
Because I want to breathe
and
again.
And immediately, that's the problem. Like, within 10 seconds, I'm open and I can breathe.
Yeah. Well,
That's so like, why can't I just do that? You know, let me do that.
I know, and you will do that.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking a lot, you and I. And one great thing about having a relationship with my mom that's so close and on the radio and all, and we work together and all this stuff, is that there's no pretense. There's no, I don't have to pretend to be something. I guess that's pretense. Everything cuts to the soul pretty quickly.
Real quickly.
Yeah. And so we can get down to it, and all of a sudden we were talking about, I'm kind of tired of my body not being completely healthy yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking today to Catherine Ingram, and can't wait, but I read her story already about loss, and we'll go through it. It's another author from Unwavering Strength. And I'm here in the office talking to you on the radio show, and I open up a drawer, pull out these pile of old pictures.
Hmm.
And it's me, 15 years ago with real cute hair, looking real cute,
mm-hmm.
with my puppy, Charlie Ray.
Oh, no.
I know. And
no.
I'm just like, oh.
Oh, that's a hard one.
It was.
Yeah.
For a lot of different reasons.
Yeah. But he was a dog of a lifetime, Charlie Ray was.
Oh, he was. But it was so sweet because in the background of these pictures,
mm-hmm.
One is your wishes in process. And so here I am,
holding
Charlie Ray.
Oh, my gosh.
Looking pretty cute.
Yeah.
Haven't been feeling cute lately. But
yeah.
Sometimes, as a woman, we just go through those cycles where we're just like, I need to up my cuteness.
Yeah.
My hair's not looking as cute as
it used to. Sometimes you're lucky you just get a shower in, right?
Right.
Get rid of that not-so-fresh feeling.
Well, as some women would know, sometimes it happens. But also, too, sometimes you go to this stage where things that used to be real easy to maintain,
mm-hmm.
you got to work a little harder at it.
Like hair.
Hair. I am.
Grow it, show it, long as I am growing my hair.
And sometimes I want it to look cute on top of my hair, and sometimes it's growing out of places I don't want it, and I have to fight that a little bit. And so I was feeling just a wee bit sorrowful for our time passing.
And then we read Catherine's story.
Yes. Oh, my God.
And we're like, oh, we don't have it that hard.
Yeah, and but feeling the loss and then going, oh, I totally get where she's coming from, and I want to talk to her about it all, about her finding the meaning in loss with mythology and myth, you know, and archetypes, and we all go through loss,
don't we?
For sure.
Don't we? Yeah.
And even, you know,
If only we could orchestrate it. You know, like we're the conductor and say, oh, I'm feeling pretty strong right now.
Right.
Okay, I'll take a loss, you know, or something like that. You know, but usually, you know, it's helter-skelter, you're on your last nerve already, and then, there's a phone call or something.
Yeah. Yes. And we all live through it. We have to. And what I liked about our story, I'm not going to tell anything more about it right now because I don't want to talk about it and then talk about it again.
Well, no, let's say, though, Unwavering Strength, book two, coming out end of February.
Yes.
You're going to interview me, aren't you, I hope?
Yes, I think the first week in February I'm going to interview you.
Oh, right.
And
yes,
it's going to be a pretty profound interview.
In the meantime, I think the audience can go ahead and buy The Clutterfly Effect, Tweak Your Way to Total Transformation by Decluttering Your Life.
Yes, definitely.
That's our book, Christy, Marie, and Julie.
For sure.
Go to Amazon.
And you can go right there, pick it up.
Yeah, you'll enjoy it, and just send us a receipt, and guess what they get? You know, don't you?
You got to send us a receipt, though, because otherwise we don't know. We'll send you the audio version of us talking about it,
and
reading the book to you.
And we sound great, don't we?
Yes, we do. Sometimes we sound nasally, which I keep complaining about that, but what am I going to do? That's who I am.
I think it's the Midwest in us. It's the Midwest girls in us.
Maybe. And so, who knows?
But guess what, though, people? We may be living in the Midwest. We may have 6 inches of snow on the ground. It may be 18 below here. But we had kale today. Take that, California.
Yeah.
We had kale, and we had spinach, and we liked it.
We can get kale and spinach here, too, everyone.
Yeah.
You're not that special over there on the West Coast. We can also get it.
Yeah. Yesterday I had avocado.
That's right. In the form of guacamole.
That's right.
See, we can get it here, too. You know, just because we're in the Midwest and it's cold out.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean we can't have our kale or spinach.
No, exactly. Doesn't mean that at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just...
Remember those comedy guys that came on tour? They came to Second City, and they had an article about them in the paper. The only thing they said, we love Chicago, but you can't find kale anywhere. We need our kale.
Really? You can't find kale? It must have been like a couple years ago. Because
it
now,
was. It was.
Now it's everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
Well, after we went over, and I'll just say really quick, I had a fun time a day. I was at a wrestling match taking tickets.
You were
for
at
charity.
Jill was doing her community service.
Yeah.
There is the Funky Monkeys were wrestling.
Exactly. And we were doing it for Crider, which is like a local, pretty northern Illinois, basically, service for adults with
disabilities.
Disabilities, mm-hmm. Yes. And it's either in service or they can live there on campus. It's all over, you know, nonprofit. I know people who go there. I know people who work there. And so I like to give my time there. And it was great. It was fun. Made a lot of money. I was like, yay, that always feels so good. And it was great because the boss of everybody was like, you know, I was debating about doing this charity event, but everybody seems to be having lots of fun.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that nice?
And I thought to myself, even if you don't like wrestling,
mm-hmm.
what's wrong with, you know, watching grown men in their underwear?
Yeah, it was. That was the fun part, right? You know? And these guys, you know, they all hold down regular jobs, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody's an accountant. There's a factory worker. But on the weekends, they're the Funky Monkeys, and they have their own persona.
Yes. I mean, how awesome is that? That's pretty great.
Yeah.
So I had my time there, and I felt uplifted this Sunday, and I did my duty, and we made some money, and that
mm-hmm.
felt really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so go wrestlers, go local wrestlers out there in the world. You do a service, and the kids love you, and the adults love you, and you're signing lots of autographs and feeling like stars. You are
you
rock
bet.
Stars.
They're
in
rock
my
stars.
Blood.
They're selling a lot of T-shirts.
Exactly, and you come up with names like Bobby Houston. Because, like, Houston, we've got a problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just love it.
And Bobby's still strong, even though he cut off all his hair.
Yes. He's not as strong. He did his persona change from good guy to bad guy. I could be some kind of archetype there, myth there, right?
Mm-hmm.
His power in your hair.
Well, it is. Well, who was it, Samson and Delilah?
Yeah.
Is that the one where
yes,
he cut his hair off
so.
And he lost his strength?
Yeah. So I wonder if our guest is there. Are you there, Catherine?
I am here.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
How are you? We're just chatting away, waiting for you. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
I'm here. I was hearing you, and I didn't know if I should jump in or not, so here I am.
No problem. But to our engineer out there, if you could raise Catherine's volume, that would be wonderful. She's just a little bit quiet on our end. So
that's the first time anyone's ever said that about me. Quiet.
Well, great. That's good. Catherine Ingram, you're an author, you're a coach, you know, pretty amazing woman, and you've written a book. Hold on right here. I have your website up, and I've looked at your website.
Okay.
And, of course, hold on a second. Okay. But anyway, we want to share your story that you've written for Unwavering Strength. But I want to hear more about you, because one thing I know about, you're a Midwestern girl yourself. You got your undergrad here at Northwestern in Chicago, didn't you?
I did. I wouldn't say I'm a Midwestern girl, but I did indeed. I got my undergrad, got a couple of degrees there at Northwestern about 400 years
Joe
ago.
Off.
Yeah.
Just a couple at Northwestern.
Yeah. Which have nothing whatsoever to do with what I do now, but that's how life goes.
That's so true.
So I know you live on the West Coast now, but do you miss the Midwest at all, that time that you were here?
Can I tell the truth?
Yes, you can tell the truth.
I don't. You know, I was born in Santa Barbara, California, and I was raised in California and in Southern Oregon, and it's just a very different climate, as I'm sure you know. So it was, although my mother was an Iowa girl, I was not quite prepared for what I discovered in Chicago. But no, I did love my time there. I did, but I'm happy to be on the coast.
Well, I mean, getting your undergrad at Northwestern in Chicago is not a bad place to be in the Midwest.
No,
it's not. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
So, Catherine, what I love for you to do is share your inspiring story with us. My Familiar Unbearable. Love mm-hmm. the title. You know, tell us how you came up with that title, and also. Mm-hmm. How you got the strength to share your story in Unwavering Strength. I also know that you wrote a book about that went more in depth with your story.
Yeah. What was that?
Washing
what
the
was
Bones.
The book? Oh, yes, that's right, Washing the Bones. Yeah, great
Washing
title,
the
by
bones.
The way.
Yeah. Thank you, yeah. Yeah, so my story that I wrote for Unwavering Strength is a summary, I guess, of the larger story that I wrote in my memoir, which is Washing the Bones, a memoir of love, loss, and transformation. And it concerned the 2 years of my life from 32 to 34 that I was widowed, or the first 2 years of being widowed, very young. And
yes.
So my story in Unwavering Strength is the summary of that experience of being widowed at 32, 7 months after I was married, in, you know, a pretty Cinderella-like story that I had of coming out of a really hard time meeting this incredible man who was, you know, East Coast, blue blood, cultured, funny, warm, you know, just like yummy perfection, and then 7 months later he was gone. Mm-hmm. And after our wedding. So the story you asked, the title, where I got my familiar unbearable, was actually I stole that from my own therapist back in the day. And it refers to the fact that I had experienced so much loss in my life from very young, from the age of 8. I lost my father very suddenly and very traumatically on Christmas Eve when I was 8 years old. He died of a cerebral hemorrhage almost immediately that day. And that loss conditioned me, unbeknownst to me, of course, at the time, for an experience of grief, or I should say of not grieving, because when I lost my father back at that time, our family we had just moved up from California to Oregon. We didn't have a lot of friends. We didn't belong to a church, none of those kinds of things. My father died over Christmas vacation, and we buried him a few days later, and with nobody present, and I went back to school. I went back mm-hmm. to the third grade, and that was that.
Sure.
There was no counseling. There was no talking about it. My mother wasn't talking to me about it. It wasn't the culture. It wasn't what was happening. It certainly wasn't what was happening in my home. There was just no grief. I didn't figure that out till much later. Like, I've never grieved. Mm-hmm. But that occurred to me, fast forward 24 years, when I'm 32, and my husband's killed, also in December, right before Christmas. Mm. Very suddenly and very traumatically. And it just broke open that ungrieved loss of my father. Mm-hmm. And I was mourning my husband. I was mourning my father. I was mourning like a little girl. I was mourning like a wife. And it was this very familiar feeling and a very unbearable feeling. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, that title comes from. And I had many losses in between of friends and family and just an inordinate amount of loss in a very short period of time, really, the first third of my life. Mm-hmm. So I always felt that there was something meaningful in that I had so many losses so young. And, not that I was the first person or by any stretch. I didn't feel special particularly. But I did feel that it was meaningful to me, and finding the meaning became all important after I was widowed, to figure out what the hell was this all about and how to navigate it. And part of learning how to navigate it was learning how to grieve, really, for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love how you put that in your story. It's like finding the why. But after a point, after the grieving occurs, and it's not, the question isn't like, why me? Like, oh, mm-hmm. why? But to really find the meaning in this all.
Yeah, and not why me, but just why. Why?
Exactly.
A curious question, not a victim question.
Right.
But a question of true curiosity of what is this about? Is it about anything? Mm-hmm.
Well,
is it about, and what do I think about God, and what do I think about these circumstances? And it was really starting to ask the very big questions.
Yeah. Well, and also in the time that you were, when your husband had passed away, I mean, you had this beautiful wedding and this honeymoon, mm-hmm. and you had gotten your master's degree. I mean, you had so many ups. Mm-hmm. highs and lows during this period, mm-hmm. you would have just felt like just a huge roller coaster ride.
Absolutely. That's a perfect description. It was the highest high that I'd ever had, the happiest I'd ever been, followed by the lowest low and the most desperate I'd ever been.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, Andrew, your husband Andrew, he died in a plane crash.
Yes, he was a pilot, and had been giving, or that day that he was killed, he was giving a lesson. He was an aerobatic pilot and instructor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before I'd met him, he used to work and do all kinds of beautiful volunteer work, you know, flying cancer patients to their appointments and all that kind of beautiful stuff. And then when we married, we moved from San Francisco up to Oregon to be closer to my mother because my stepfather had just died right before our wedding, actually.
Oh.
And we wanted to be closer to my mother, and he wanted to open his own flight school, which he did immediately as soon as we got here after our wedding in the summer. And he was teaching students how to fly, aerobatics, you know, loop-de-loops and all the good stuff.
Right.
And he went up with a student that day on December 14th, and they went into an uncontrolled spin during a maneuver, kind of mysteriously. I still don't really know. I have my thoughts about what happened, but no one knows for sure. And he got his student, he talked his student out on the wing and had his student parachute to safety.
No.
And,
oh, really?
And he was killed on impact. His student had not a scratch.
We wondered about that.
My husband was 30 years old, and he was killed on impact.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So it was about as tragic as a story can be.
It was interesting because I've had two of my brothers die, but one, you talked about when you heard the knock at the door, you mm-hmm. had this deep soulful intuition, didn't you?
I did. I actually my mother had come over that evening because she was very lonely, and Andrew was late. And, she and I were having a little drink in front of the fire, and I said, you know, this is very strange. He hasn't called. He always calls. And then I looked at her, and I said, well, you know me, always thinking the worst, and kind of rolled my eyes because mm-hmm. it was December. It was coming up on the anniversary of my
right.
father's death.
Right.
And she looked at me and said, yes, yes, you know, I know. And my stepbrother had just been found dead in his apartment a week before this happened.
Oh, God.
And an aunt had died of a heart attack in Africa 2 weeks before this had happened.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd had two family deaths already in the month. And I said that to her, and I rolled my eyes, and in that moment, there was a knock on the door, and that wasn't literary effect that I made at that moment. That actually happened that way.
Mm-hmm.
I just said that to her. The words had just come out of my mouth, and I heard the knock, and my whole body just froze.
Oh, my God.
Because I knew. I just knew.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. When you were going through your process, you talk about in your story, 2 months after your husband passes away, you're visiting his crash site, and you see something there hanging. Could you share that a little bit with us?
Sure.
Because I love how
you
explained what this was to you, what this meant to you.
Yes. Well, it was Valentine's Day, and which is sort of the worst holiday of the year if you're just lost someone, you lost your love of your life.
You bet.
And I was going, I had already just gone into an extremely deep depression, but I drove up to the mountains where the plane had gone down, and it was up in a pasture area up in the hills, and the imprint of the plane was still there where it had crashed, and little pieces of glass and whatnot. It was a strangely warm day, February,
mm-hmm.
and very quiet, very, very silent and peaceful, and I was just watching the hawks circling, and I was sitting on a stone near where the plane had gone down, and I brought red roses. And I was sitting there in the quiet, just thinking about my husband and talking with him. And I turned to the left a little, just as I sat, I was looking around. And there on a bush was hanging his headset with his initials written on the side.
Wow.
And I couldn't, I couldn't breathe.
No.
I was just so stunned because the whole site had been cleaned up and people had come and, you know, all of it had been cleaned. And yet this was there, hanging there. And I just felt that it was there for me.
Oh, you bet.
I just, I didn't know how else to interpret that, but it was there for me. It was, to me, in that moment, and still today, it was him letting me know he was still there with me.
Yes. How many years has it been?
It has now been 18 years.
Oh.
It's been a long time.
But, you know, that was so courageous of you, Catherine, to do that. I mean, we're talking just a couple of months, right?
Mm-hmm.
After the crash, you went there. That was so brave of you.
I did. Well, I was actually the only person in the family who didn't go to the crash site right when it happened. I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
His parents did. His parents flew out from the East Coast, and they were brave, and his brothers, and my family even, but I couldn't do it.
Mm-mm.
I couldn't. So that was the first time I went up alone.
Right, you made the trip alone.
But it was actually a very beautiful day for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like. I mean, I can feel that. I mean, as you talk about it, I can feel just the bravery. The you know, you brought flowers. Is that right?
I brought red roses to him.
Yeah.
Well, I like how you talk about it being. It tethered you to this world. And I think when loss occurs after the immediate
shock
and grief comes rushing in, we need to look for those things that tethered us to this world. And how did you start, when did it start occurring to you to start finding the meaning? How, you know, was that the starting point of your journey to try to find more meaning?
I think that it was from almost from the beginning. As you say, there's a great deal of shock that has to be, you know, you have to swim through. But there was very much from the beginning that it was so unbelievable and it was so enormous. And it challenged everything I thought I believed. You know, all my thoughts about God and, you know, how could I be so happy and have this ripped away? I mean, I was angry with God. I mean, angry, like railing in the shower, angry to the point where finally after a little bit, right around that February time, I said, you know what, I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Right.
I don't like you. I don't understand you and I don't like you. But I was already a trained therapist at that point, so I was really steeped in psychology and especially depth psychology, so really studying the psychology of spirit and of the unconscious and dreams and all these things are very, very important to me. And I believed and I do believe in my heart of hearts that everything is meaningful. So holding that, I had that belief system going in, and I thought, well, here's the big challenge. If this is meaningful, what is the meaning? What is this all about? Mm-hmm. Now, that meaning unravels very slowly and over a long period of time. There are many different meanings. There's a lot in it, and it's still unraveling. I mean, I didn't write this story. I didn't write my book and then this story for Unwavering Strength until years and years and years later, and I'm still learned things, and I'm still learning things. So the meaning is there. If you search for the meaning begins to reveal itself to you. Mm-hmm. But it was a very arduous...
Yeah, I mean, I would say you're really right. I mean, you don't find that kind of rich depth of meaning until after you get ragingly mad and angry. And, you know, you're on the floor crying and,
you bet. Feel, suicidal.
Yeah, that's
suicidal.
Hard to, you know, that requires some time. And you think, oh, maybe
absolutely.
I slept last night or whatever. And you think, you know, it's like three steps forward and two steps back, you know. It's a really a dance, isn't
you're
it?
You're so right. You're so right. No, I tell my clients, and I say in my story, first you grieve.
You bet.
And that's what you're saying. First you grieve.
Mm-hmm.
And that grief takes, well, everyone's different.
You bet.
But a good couple years, I think mm-hmm. that's a nice average number.
And you know,
is a good couple
you're
of
right.
Years.
And I want to say everybody grieves, and everybody grieves in their own way, and you pray
Absolutely.
That you don't get stuck there. And
you don't
if you do,
get
you,
stuck.
You, know, you pray
no.
that there's some a little bit of peace there, but you know, it ain't pretty, it's gritty.
It ain't pretty. And I what I write is that grief moves at the speed of a glacial thaw, you know.
Grief <That's> great.
And I like winters in Chicago. It moves like
awesome.
That fast.
That is so true.
So it feels like it's stuck often when it's not. And you know, when I work with clients around grief, it's really, mostly I have to encourage them to just be where they are in it.
Yeah.
Because no one wants to grieve. No one wants to feel this. None of us want to feel this. It's horrific. It's terrible.
It's
dreadful.
It's like, you
no
know,
one
when,
wants it.
It's like a raw nerve. It's like going to
it's
the
horrible.
Dentist and he touches that raw nerve and you're,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're like, nothing hurts worse, you know.
Nothing hurts worse, and nothing really eases it, and you know when you wake up tomorrow morning, it's going to feel just the same.
It'll
and this is a very difficult process, and what you really need is tremendous grace and patience with yourself and hopefully someone else who is witness with you to mm-hmm. hold you in that process, whether that's literal holding or metaphorical, like therapeutic holding. It's just someone who can be with you through this really slow journey
right.
to let you know it's okay, this is okay. You know, I want to say here, because this is part of my little soapbox, our culture does not support grief.
I totally agree
our
with
culture
you.
Runs from death and runs from grief. So we have no cultural container for it. We have mm-hmm. no ritual. And you don't grieve alone. You know, normal people don't grieve alone.
No.
But in our culture, we do.
Yeah.
And it's tragic.
It really is tragic. It's as if in our culture, people feel like it's going to jump off of you onto them.
Exactly. Well, yes, they're afraid of it because we're afraid of death.
Yes.
You know, death is the supreme failure in our culture.
Yes.
We see it as the great failure. We don't see it as part of life, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's
well,
a
I like
normal
what you say.
Part
you
of
say
life.
Death is not the opposite of life. It's the opposite of birth. And then
that's
what,
right.
After death is birth again. So I thought that was very poignant. I'm like, yes.
Have you remarried at all, Catherine?
I did remarry. 4 years after I was widowed, I was fortunate enough to remarry. And as I speak to you today, I have a beautiful 11-year-old son and a lovely 8-year-old daughter and a very beautiful, kind husband. Unfortunate.
Oh, and dogs. You have dogs, don't you?
And dogs, yes.
Yay.
And great big doggies. I'm a big dog girl. Yeah.
Yeah, we are,
yes,
too.
I am.
Well, I'm
no, I just to finish our thought, I just, for any listeners who are grappling around in this really dark terrain of grief and depression, mm-hmm. that it does change and that the grief is extremely important because the grief opens us up and prepares us for the birth that is to come. And
I hope they do hear that because I know, like, when I have gone through, you know, terrible grief, especially when I was a lot younger, I used to think that there was something wrong with me. You know, like, oh, my God, what's uh-huh. wrong with me? So it added sort of insult to the injury.
Mm-hmm.
And because you are wandering around in that desert, especially if some, you know, other people... I'm talking about when my younger brother died in a car wreck. It was not Christmas Eve, mm-hmm. but the day before Christmas Eve, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I had not lost anybody, you know, that close to me or young. It wasn't the natural mm-hmm. order of things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And That made me go into, I decided to get my master's degree in counseling after I decided to go into counseling and how much it helped, and I wanted to do the same for others as well, Catherine.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
So,
grief is beautiful, and it's normal, and it's important. And it will change you, and it will help you become the person you are needing to be if you can let it work its magic.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. Well, Catherine, I just want to say thank you for being on Life with the Girlfriends and sharing your such a touching story and being so open and honest. Because you're so right. In this culture, we run away from grief, and we can't. And sometimes,
I mean, I still sometimes feel grief or dying. I'll just tell my husband or Julia, I need a good cry. I just need a good cry, and it does wash the bones, doesn't it? Speaking of the title of your book,
yes. It does, and that is part of washing the bones, is the grieving and going over it and over it and over it until it starts to, until you begin to go through the metamorphosis of becoming your new being, becoming who you're supposed to become.
You know that the familiar, unbearable, isn't that a term that's down south, like, if you're doing like magic or something, you find a familiar. I don't know exactly.
I'm not sure, but someone who's very close to you is your familiar. Yeah.
Yes.
And it is very close to me, and it's not a companion that you might not like everything it does to you or how it makes you feel, but it's a very powerful companion, and it does carry great potential and great magic for
that's changing exactly how,
you.
When I read the title, that before I'd even read your story, I had that deep connection with that word.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Catherine, audience find out more about you?
Well, I would invite them to visit my website, which is www.CatherineIngram.com, and it talks about my writings and my work as a soul coach and a therapist and everything you could possibly want to know about me. So,
that sounds wonderful. And it's Catherine with a C.
No, K.
It's
K?
With a K. A K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E. Yes.
All right. Well, I think your clients are very lucky that they have you for a soul coach, because I do feel that you have plumbed the depths, you've gone to the underworld, and you've come out transformed.
Mm. Oh, thank you. That's lovely. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Catherine. Have a nice night, and thank you for being on Life with the Girlfriends. We really appreciate this.
Thank you, Catherine.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I've so enjoyed it. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, she was awesome.
Yeah, don't you, when somebody comes out on the other side of that, what's something that goes through the fire and comes out even stronger,
Well, like even like the phoenix that rises from the fire.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
And what is that with steel? If it's not put into water after the fire, something like that, it's too malleable. I don't know. But yeah.
Here's the thing. As she's a soul coach, a therapist, if you're grieving, if you're hurting, if your world's got turned on its ear, right? You don't want to go to somebody that's never experienced it. You really don't.
No.
You want somebody that's going to look you in the eye, hold your hand, and say, you will get through this, and you believe them,
like many before you, but I've done it, you will get through it.
That's right.
Because I haven't, I've lost grandparents, I've lost uncles and aunts, but I've not, knock on wood, I've been very blessed.
You don't understand the grief when someone closer to you passes away.
Mm-hmm.
Someone in your daily life passes away.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, the natural order of things.
Right.
When you lost your younger brother, it didn't feel like the natural order of things.
No.
And how do you get around that?
And, you know, and also I didn't know what to do with my parents' grief.
Right.
I mean, I was barely, you know, making it on my own, and to see them, you know, so acting so crazy.
You're like, crazier. Yeah.
So yeah. We can laugh now because it's like 30 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, yes. Yeah. Well, and I'm not going to say this quote right, this Bible verse right, but we had talked about this a little bit, about the Psalms. About walking through the valley of death.
Oh, yeah, Psalm 23.
Right.
Like, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death.
Yes.
I will fear no evil.
Right.
But we like that one because we say, keep on walking.
Yes.
You know, you walk through it. You don't stay there and build
a
compound.
Right.
You just keep on walking.
Yeah, you're not building a concrete barrier that you can survive living in there.
Yeah, you don't become
a prepper. Yeah. and the fact that
I bet some people do though.
Right. But like she talks about in her story about you have to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a way out. It's a way through. And what that means is that you aren't instantly transformed. One minute you're in grief, the next minute life is joyous and you've moved on.
Well, because, I mean, she talked about the transformation. Catherine talked about the metamorphosis. Think about what the butterfly goes through.
Right.
Which
is on the cover of her book, The Butterfly Is.
Oh, does she?
Yeah.
Well, just like the clutterfly effect.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's that, you know... was it like a worm kind of a thing, isn't it? A caterpillar type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it actually turns to liquid inside the technical things right, but it turns into a liquid, and then it eats the liquid. It actually devours itself into making it become butterfly.
Right, right.
So, I mean, that's, you know, that's not like... here today, and then, you know, beautiful tomorrow. Turning, it's liquefying, you know, it's eating all the liquid
And I think it has to go with our life saying that when we were younger, when we're growing up, or at these certain times, we feel our life will just continually have this progress.
Mm-hmm.
Everything will keep getting better and better year in, year out.
The better it gets, the better it gets.
Yes. And I do believe that. I want to believe that at a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of all that, we have loss. We have grief. We have things that don't turn out.
You're absolutely. And Catherine was right when she said, I think in general, Americans, we don't know how to grieve. And, you know, what's everybody's favorite slogan nowadays? You know, move forward. Or what is it? Keep on moving on. Or,
yeah. Well, I was talking, this is a couple years ago, I was talking to my cousin who had lost her dad, her mom, her brother who had passed away, and she was a young mother, like 23, 22, and she was saying, you know, I just feel so alone because, you know, my family's gone and my secondary family lived down there because she doesn't live next near us, and no one wants to talk to me, and I go, honey, I'm so sorry, but... You have a lot of grief around you.
Right.
And that's hard to...
It's hard for other people to be a container for that.
And especially if you're wanting to express it.
Mm-hmm.
People
are needing to talk about it.
Talk about it.
Yeah.
It's hard to not just break down. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's not, you know... So I just... Like for you, because you have your degree in this, you have also your certificate in grief counseling,
mm-hmm.
and also with Catherine, I feel so... humbled, but I'm so appreciative to people like you, like Catherine, who do the work, who support people going through grief,
mm-hmm.
who can hold the story, hold the idea for transformation,
mm-hmm.
hold the pain.
Yes, and see, that's the thing. It's like being a gardener. You keep having to till the soil because you're not going to get to that rich, deep stuff that you can go, aha, you're not going to get there right away.
No.
You know,
no.
You're going, like I said, you're going to crawl on the floor. You're going to,
yeah.
You know, to plumb the depth, you have to have a level of stability and courage that, you know, that you will come out on the other side of it. Because in those early days, you don't believe that. It just seems endless.
It does. And then also you don't feel, there's no plan coming to you yet.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be different if you got a guidebook, you know,
mm-hmm.
a workbook. Okay, mm-hmm. here's your first question. Or here's your first step-by-step process.
Catherine goes, you know, if God comes to you and you go, well, no, you know, Catherine, let me tell you about this. And you're like, no, I don't want to hear anything.
Yeah.
Like, get out of here.
And
I am not ready to talk to you yet. And, you know, absolutely, right? You're not.
Yeah. Well, and I thank you for being so honest with us, because so many times we're not supposed to say we turned our back on God or we questioned God.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's all for a bigger plan. There must be for a bigger plan. But, mm-hmm. like, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. If you tracked yet your emotional state, I was feeling pretty darn great. And then you took away my husband? Wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And to be in that cycle of loss. And only
but
now.
But you know what I bet, too, though?
Mm-hmm.
One of the upticks of it, you know, here she is, you know, soul psychology. You know, you can, at some level, you still feel the deeper connection. You're connected, and do you know what I'm saying? That's kind of a,
definitely.
You know, that would be kind of a gift. But I'm just saying later. You
well,
know,
and she talks about too in her counseling, being a soul coach. I mean, connecting mm-hmm. the spirit and the soul and
mm-hmm.
the body together.
Mm-hmm.
Really going down deep for change, not just surface change, focusing on goals and all this stuff, but really having deep understanding,
mm-hmm.
which takes time and practice. And
did you say goals?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Not just like having
mm-hmm.
goals.
But it's interesting because I always think of the soul. I mean, I wonder if the soul does have goals. I always think of the soul as very creative and artistic
mm-hmm.
and wanting to have, you know, I don't want a timeline. I'm a soul.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be an artist, or I want to be.
Where do you think the goals come from? If, let's say you have your spirit
mm-hmm.
goal, yeah, mm-hmm. your spirit, your soul, you know, and
your
I think
body.
Of this, your body.
Mm-hmm.
I think of the soul as your mind, your will.
Yes.
Your emotional state.
Right, right. And I agree with that.
Yeah, you know, I think of your spirit as your intuition, your connection with God,
right?
Or your
divine.
Higher, your divine,
mm-hmm.
and you know, where do you think that lays? That lies, I should say,
in terms of goals.
Yeah,
you know, if I was going to define it like you define it, I mean, I would say that the spirit is the one that quickens you, that gives you that, you know, there's that. I lay before you life and death, blessing and curse. Choose life. You know,
right.
And so I think it's the spirit that quickens your pulse, the pulse toward life.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to when, hey, I do want to lay in bed today, and I do want to keep the covers over my head, and yet there will be a time when you'll push yourself. There'll be that impulse toward life. You know,
yeah.
So maybe that's where the goals can come in.
And goals are just basically written down desires, written down. Inspiration in
mm-hmm.
some sense.
Mm-hmm.
I had just picked up a little one of those cards from Abraham Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you call them, you know, daily cards or
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And on the front, it's, my slightest improvement is of such great value. Your slightest improvement in your emotional state. But I want to read this one line in the back.
But you said my slightest improvement is a great.
My slightest improvement
I love that.
Is of such great value.
I love that.
And here's what they say. There is tremendous value when you are able to deliberately cause even the slightest improvement in the way you feel.
Mm-hmm.
For even in the small emotional improvement, you may have regained a measure of control.
Oh, thank you. And you know what? This is so true because you came home after doing your wrestling.
Yeah.
you were wrestling.
But I wasn't wrestling.
You weren't wrestling, but the Funky Monkeys were, and you were taking tickets at the door for a good charity.
Yes.
And I said, Jill, could you give me an hour of your time? Because I'm needing some therapy, girlfriend. And you went, oh, no. You did.
I gave it to you.
And I did. By the time that we were done, I felt, I would say, more than just the slightest bit better. I really did. I'd gotten my footing, you know, again, and I'd sort of landed in a different spot, and I knew it. I could feel it.
Well, that's interesting, is that because you allowed yourself the time. You said about an hour.
Yeah.
And it took about an hour before you felt that,
yes.
That you felt the thought, whatever. It's like you had to get to a place. You let it all out there.
Right.
And then a thought came to the surface that made sense, was believable.
Yeah.
Was a higher elevated
what
thought.
What was it? Do you remember? I don't remember.
That you're okay.
Yeah.
That you're going to be able to get through this and do it.
But it came at the right time.
Yes. Well, like we had talked about previously with our audience, is that, you know, we were doing something, I think we have, doing something else, and we've just been hitting roadblocks.
Right.
And not on our end, on somebody else's end.
No.
And
like roadblocks, obstacles,
yes.
Challenges.
And so you can do all the work you want. And mm-hmm. keep doing it. Mm-hmm. I think two weekends ago we were talking to, I can't remember her name, and she said, really, obstacles or these roadblocks, you can either decide that it's your spirit saying,
I agree.
You better really want this.
Yes.
I want you to prove
right.
to me that you want this.
Yes.
And you're going to get it then.
Right.
Or my unconscious is saying,
my
I can't
take it. Is somehow resisting it
yes,
all. You
and
know?
Attracting these things to me.
Yeah.
And if it is, then you say, okay, unconscious,
mm-hmm.
get with the program.
Mm-hmm.
We want this.
Exactly.
We want this.
Exactly. And I think that's when you're a soul worker, that is the challenge because you are willing to work with the soul, right? And
yes.
and you, it is artistic. It does require reading it at a deeper level, you may say, maybe the universe is, you know, saying
yeah.
I shouldn't be doing this. But at some point, you know, you check in with your intuition, you check in with God, and you get the go-ahead, and you go, damn it, full speed ahead.
Yes, and whatever obstacle is in my way, get the F out.
Get the F out.
Or I go over faster, be quicker, because I know it's making me a better person.
Right.
Whatever
what
you got to tell
say,
yourself.
Like, fail fast, people.
Fail fast.
Get
and we always say, forge ahead and leverage. That's
yes.
what fail means.
That's
forge
what,
ahead and
we
leverage.
Did, and I want to say, we should have, did we coin that? Because, I mean, do we own that?
We got the URL.
Oh, good. Because we are the one that did fail. Forge ahead and leverage. Because when you fail, you do gain leverage.
Yes, you do.
You get a little wisdom. You get a little knowledge. Unless you're, like, totally unconscious and and decide not to learn anything from your failure.
Or it may happen a couple more times, but then you get the picture and you're like, wait a minute, there's a pattern here. I will take notice now.
Yeah, and I will forge ahead.
Forge ahead.
As opposed to just stay here and cry my eyes out.
Right, exactly. You forge ahead and leverage.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. So everyone, just wanted to check in with everybody and say, mm-hmm. hey, go to our website, ChristineMarieAndJulie.com. You can get us at talktous@ChristineMarieAndJulie.com. Pick up our book, The Clutterfly Effect. Tweak your way.
Total transformation. How?
By decluttering your life.
Of
and like
life,
the physical.
The acronym for life is look inside for an inside out job. Should I just keep on going
please
with these acronyms?
Please.
Trust. To rely on the spirit totally. I can do more.
Hey, girlfriend, why don't you share with everybody? We were having a haiku challenge with
my
brother.
Yes, we do these little fun things during the weekend. We were doing haiku.
Yes.
We were texting haiku poems.
And the one that kept coming up as the best poem ever.
It's the best. Can I say it?
Yes. Now, okay. As far as we know, it's haiku is three lines.
Yes.
575.
Right. 575, three lines, haiku.
Go for it, girlfriend.
And this one is called Haiku, Ode to Eliot. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
I saw you eat poo. You wanted to kiss me, but I saw you eat poo.
Perfect.
Haiku.
Okay. And there you go. So as we end our show,
mm-hmm.
Mama, what do you think about that?
I think it was great.
It was great.
I thought it was a great show. We learned a lot. It was great.